Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Morning, Jeremy.
Morning. What's up, man?
What's up, Riv?
Morning, boys.
What's up, Riv?
Just living the dream.
Lots to talk about today, man.
What's to talk about?
Buddy, Chicago Blackhawks get Connor Bedard. Come on, man. That's like the talk of the last 2 days.
Yeah,
it's let's
hear your thoughts on that. You're Mr. Chicago. Like,
you know what? I wanted Chicago to lose the rest of the way so that they didn't have to worry about having those balls automatically appear for Chicago. And, you know, how often do you see the top three when 16 all the way to three work out perfectly, and then all of a sudden
one of the biggest markets in the league,
the top three all move, and not only do they move, but we got a sneak peek into the first movement before we even saw the card get displayed, because Kevin Weeks goes to commercial getting ready for the top three, saying, well, we got our first movement. Columbus moves to number three. And I'm like, what? How does he know that?
Yeah.
What's going on?
But that's a problem. Do you not think that's a problem? Like, don't you want to watch this draft, this draft live? I want to see the balls live. I don't trust the NHL at all. I think, and I'm going to tell you right now, you take a poll right now, the majority of people out there feel that this was rigged, and that is really sad. It is really sad. I actually do think it's rigged. I really do think it's rigged. That's just my opinion. I think that this, if you would have had Columbus win this, or San Jose win this, or you know, Anaheim win this, no one would be saying anything. But it just so happens that when you look at Anaheim, who's their star? They have a young Zegras, and they picked McTavish the year before last year. And when you look at Columbus, they have Johnny Hockey there, Johnny Gaudreau, Patrick Laine. They have some young guys in Cole Sillinger and Johnson. And now all of a sudden you look at the Chicago Blackhawks, which is one of the biggest markets in the league. It's a money-making machine, and they lost Kane, and they lost Taves, a guys that they drafted 13, 14 years ago, okay, won three Stanley Cups, and they have no face for one of the biggest markets in the league. Where do you think Gary Bettman would want him to go? And all it just so happens that Chicago pulls this off in a draft for a player that has been in the same breath as Sidney Crosby, and a decade later, Connor McDavid. And now you have Connor Bedard. It just so happens he goes to Chicago. Bullshit.
But it's rigged, not, man. It's not even that. It's just that it's the three all moved, right? It's all three of them moved. You know, Anaheim needs it more than Columbus does, I believe. And Columbus goes from 2 to 3, Anaheim goes from 1 to 2, and all of a sudden Chicago goes from 3 to 1. Now, again, why don't they put that bubble ball machine on television and have the balls come up where they land?
Because what they do, Jeremy, is they bring media into the back room and tell them that it's all legitimate and this is how it's done and there's no tampering going on here.
Well, obviously they did it before, and they let the media know what the, at least ESPN know what the order was, right? So that they can write their show lines, because Kevin Weeks had, for every team that was picked, that he had his whole monologue for that team. But to let that go, I just, you know what? It's a draft lottery, and it's not a lottery in my opinion.
What do you mean? They didn't just run the lottery before, Jeremy. They recorded that 3 weeks ago when the season ended.
Well, regardless, same
before,
thing.
Before they even did the lottery, they knew what they were doing. I'm sorry, I'm with Riv. I think it's completely rigged and it's complete bullshit.
That's what I'm saying. If it's a lottery, it's a lottery. Hey, listen, when they pull the numbers out for Lotto, you know, or Mega, you know, the Mega Ball, they see it on TV. The balls come up. Two, you put it down. You know it's there.
Yeah.
Four, you know it's there. Yeah. Right? Nobody can rig it.
Well, I want to add one thing to what I said. I think that this is rigged. I think it's absolutely ridiculous, JR. Okay? I want to state that. I really do believe this. But here's the thing. If I had a choice for Connor Bedard and where I wanted him to go, I want him to go to Chicago. I do not want him to go to Anaheim. I do not want to sit up at 10:30 at night and watch a game till 1 o'clock because I want to watch one of the most exciting young players in the last decade. Okay. I'm happy that he's going to Chicago.
I think am too.
It's the greatest thing in the world to have him in Chicago.
I screamed. I'm so happy. I'm screaming. I'm so happy that the league decided to give Bedard to Chicago. I'm so happy. Trust me. I'm so happy.
And I want to state that, because people are going to take this the wrong way, that I just think that this league is a piece of shit and they rigged the whole thing. Listen, I wanted him to go to Chicago. When he went to Chicago, I was like, this is the greatest thing ever for hockey in general.
Did you see the ticket sales that happened in Chicago hours after? Like, I think one day later, they sold $2.5 million in season tickets for the next couple of years already.
Oh, for sure. For sure. That's
like immediately. That's
and you know what's no one's no one.
Tell you what sucks about that.
Like, once he goes first overall, like, once they get that pick, JR, do they immediately up their ticket prices? Like, is that what an organization like that would do? Would they immediately up their ticket prices? Because why wouldn't you?
You would, but I don't think Chicago would, because their fans have just dealt with mediocrity for three years.
Bullshit. If I were Connor,
they've also won three Stanley Cups. Cry me a river.
Hold on a second. I want to know how much the Hawks and the league and everyone are going to make on Bedard jerseys, and that, you know, we're already at $2.5 million for ticket sales. And the minute he announces his jersey number, their jerseys are going to
be 98.
Is that what he's going with? 98. So then he's going to go 98, and jersey sales are going to go through the roof. This kid's only going to make guaranteed $2.7 million on his entry level deal.
But listen, it's again
Connor McDavid, same thing in Edmonton. There was a $5 billion TV deal banking on Connor McDavid landing in Canada so Rogers could at least satisfy their appetite for anybody to want to watch West Coast Canadian hockey, because it was dying.
Yeah.
Well, you know, so again, it's these guys don't get a lick of that.
You, you said it about the league making money. The league is going to make so much money because it's an original six team. When you have an original six team, you have so much more of a broader fan base spread all over the country rather than just a Columbus base or an Anaheim base, right? So you're going to have people from all over the country getting these Connor Bedard jerseys because Chicago Blackhawks are deep-rooted in history
there are,
fans.
In Canada, there are tons of Hawks fans. Again, yeah. I'm super happy for Chicago. I'm not really happy for Chicago because of, you know, some of the stuff that's happened, you know, as we all know in the last, you know, number of years. But, man, it's a perfect place for this young man to start his career.
Does Patrick Kane come back to Chicago now that Bedard is there?
Listen, I think they would take him back there in a heartbeat.
Well, he's got someone to sell his place.
Like, I'm going
to
tell you right now. I don't even know. I couldn't name you. I couldn't. I don't think I'd be able to name you more than like five players on Chicago right now.
No, I couldn't. There's not a chance. But I will tell you this: they need Patrick Kane back in Chicago to help this kid.
To take pressure off the kid, right? To
and stardom. Like Patrick Kane was a megastar right from the start, and he had to deal with it. This kid's going to be a megastar, so you know he's going to need someone to kind of guide
but
him
what
through.
What it does, though, right, JR? What it does is by having Patrick Kane there, a Hall of Famer. He is you know, arguably the greatest U.S. born hockey player. All of these accolades, won three Stanley Cups. When shit hits the fan in Chicago and they're struggling a little bit, because they're going to struggle again. This team is not going from one of the worst teams in the league and they're going to skyrocket up the board because of one young kid who's 18. They're going to struggle for a couple of years, right?
Yeah.
And I think Patrick Kane is exactly what they need. They still need a face for the franchise. They still need guidance. And I'm going to tell you right now, that kid needs someone to play with, right? And he might have the opportunity to play with a Patrick Kane, and maybe they don't.
Okay. There's one caveat that we might be missing on Patrick Kane that might keep Patrick Kane in New York. And that's Joel Quenneville possibly becoming the Rangers coach.
I just read an article yesterday that said that they're not interested in Joel Quenneville.
For sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Cause I heard rumors that was happening. If that was happening, that could.
Well, what article was that, Riff? I'm not questioning. I'm asking what article, what media outlet
Larry Brooks.
That's legitimate.
Larry Brooks reports.
Although I do think the Rangers will not pursue
Joel Quenneville for their coaching vacancy. So
if he says that's true because he's as close to the Rangers.
I read it.
Even though he's a fucking asshole, he's a good asshole.
Larry Brooks is just like
Larry Brooks. Larry Brooks is an absolute prick of a person. And I mean, he's close. He's smart. He's close to the team, but he is a bad person as his relationship with hockey players go. He is a bad person.
Is he the guy that got into a shouting match with a defenseman there?
With Boyle.
That's right.
Boyle.
Craig, did you ever see this?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I remember Larry Brooks from when we played. I mean, he's ruthless, right? He's ruthless. He is looking for a story, right? He's in a big, massive market, and he wants people to read his stuff. And he asks tough questions that maybe can trigger the players.
He's good at what he does. He is good at what he does.
Like, I hated him as a player, okay? Because I was the maturity of myself back then and the other players dealing with him. You're young, you're immature. Even though you think you're mature, you're not mature. And now all of a sudden, years and years later, I chuckle at it because now that you're so much older, so much more mature, and you understand what they're trying to get at, and you can hold your emotions much differently, right? You're an emotional time bomb. Like, you're a ticking time bomb when you're a player.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you're playing, you know, you're emotional, certainly after games and stuff like that, and things happen through a season. These reporters, these good reporters, they know what buttons to press. And
I will give Larry Brooks one thing. Okay. He writes stuff that is very controversial, and he doesn't care if he embarrasses you or follows you out or does a bad story, but you know what he does? He walks into the locker room right in front of your face. He doesn't hide. He doesn't walk away. He'll stand right in front of you, and he'll defend himself, and he'll battle back. He's not one of these writers that write something really bad and then just hide in their office and don't come out and show themselves.
Yeah. You know, Montreal.
Yeah, Brooksy. He writes it, and he stands up for what he writes, and he comes in, and you got to give the guy a lot of credit for that. Even though I don't like it, that doesn't mean I have to like it, but I give him a lot of respect for, hey, it's a hard thing to write controversial things, but it's even harder to walk in front of the person that you write about and stick up for what you write.
Coincidentally enough, Craig went off on Jeff Skinner. Two games later, Jeff Skinner takes off, career year, unbelievable season. He sees Skinner at the golf tournament or at the golf course. Skinner won't even come over and thank him. If Jeff fucking Skinner had any fucking balls, he would have come over and said, you know what, Craig, I heard everything you said about me on that fucking show after the whistle. And got to say, man, thank you. Turn my career around. Appreciate it. We're going to make the playoffs next
year. You know, the amazing thing is, like, you laugh at that, but
I did the same thing. I gave him shit too.
I had Talaposo and I belong to the same course. Alex Tuck just joined this year. And they were playing. So out comes Skinner and Mittelstadt to play around. And from what I hear, Mittelstadt's quite the player. He's pretty good at the game, JR. So you might want to keep an eye on this young buck.
I got you.
But right away when I get to the course, obviously I know Oki, and you know, I was talking to Alex Tuck because I didn't rip on Alex Tuck. I said at the start of the year that he would not be in the top five in scoring on the Sabres. That was my prediction for the year. One of my predictions was Alex Tuck is not going to be in the top five. And he absolutely proved me wrong, but immediately came up to me and rubbed it in my face saying, yeah, good one. Good. Nice try, buddy. And I was laughing my head off. We were laughing about it. And great human, that kid, you know.
Alex is awesome. He's awesome. Awesome.
But the funny thing is Mittelstadt and Skinner on the other side on the putting green, and they're not coming over at all because, you know, Mittelstadt was a guy that took a little bit of heat. You know, I think everybody in Saberland gave him a little bit of heat, and he turned it on and had what an unbelievable season he had, especially to end. And Skinner, who I've never really been a fan of his game. And I blasted him at one point in the season, 'cause he was not playing well. I don't care. And then all of a sudden, like, I'm not even kidding you. You can ask Petey. He went on fire from that point on for the rest of the season. And
he didn't just do it on the podcast. He goes on the local radio station here, you know, and this show has the biggest audience in Western New York on Shred and Reagan. And I listened to this. I was dropping my kid off at school, and Craig is absolutely destroying with conviction and justification. Okay. And merit. There was tons of merit. Thank you.
It's very easy to pick on guys, right? I mean,
And then you look who it's coming from. You obviously, you know, Craig's got a great resume in the NHL. But I was listening, I was just like, "Holy shit, man!" Like,
but you got to give Skinner a lot of credit for just saying, "You know what? Fuck you. Here I go. Look out." What's wrong with Gerard Gallant? How does this guy continue to have amazing records and get fired? What's going on? There's something.
He had a winning record, did he not? In Florida. He got fired. He got fired, and they didn't even call him.
He literally got left at the cap.
By the way, he went to Florida, which was a losing team. The first year, he had 96 points. Then his second year, he went over 100 points. Right? Yep. Like, he is about a 65 or 70% winning percentage in his career. You look at his numbers. Look at his record. He's like 365 and 160. Like his winning percentage, he took an expansion team to the Stanley Cup Finals and then gets gassed 14 games into the next season at 500. Like he goes to New York. New York has two good seasons under him, over 100 points, and he gets fired. There's something's fishy with this.
I agree.
Apparently I don't know if you read this, but in after game four, so this would have been the second game. So New York Rangers went to New Jersey in game one and two and dominated, won the first two games on the road. Third game came back to Madison Square Gardens.
2-1
overtime. They lose, right? And then 2-1. In the final game four, they won 3-1. And they lost 3-1.
It was a brutal game by the Rangers.
Okay. Something was said after the game in the hallway downstairs after the game. Chris Jury, GM of the Rangers, was downstairs, and apparently something was said, and there was a shouting match between the two of them in the hallway where multiple people watched. And the rest of the series played itself out, and he was fired, what, a couple days later? So
good juice.
Something was said, and GM and coach not on the same page.
Well, it was the same thing, and it was the same thing in Vegas. There was bad relationship between coach and GM there too. So there's something about Gerard Gallant who doesn't like to listen to GMs or blames GMs or something, because I know the players seem to love playing for him. But, and they do play hard for him, but he's a GM killer. Yeah. Sounds like, holy smoke. It's amazing to me. But
I think that's interesting too. And I think the guy that will slide in there will be Laviolette.
Again, I think they got to bring, I think Chris Jury is going to bring in somebody different. I don't think he's going to regurgitate.
Do you think it's going to, like, you know, you have a Quenneville who's got larger than life coaching personality, you know, and status behind him. And Laviolette is very much the same. Stanley Cup winner, coached an extremely long time, multiple teams. I'm not sure if he's going to be the guy either. I think you could see somebody that we don't know about. I think you could see someone fresh, someone that has, you know, up to date new ideas of the game. Here's the thing, in that market, it's not about the coach. The team and the city and everything is bigger than the coach. The coach is a guy that just needs to guide these players, because he's gonna inherit an extremely, extremely good team. He doesn't have to overcoach them. He has to be a great guider. He has to be a great communicator and allow these guys to go and figure it out.
I think it's going to be a guy from the AHL. You watch. I just think it's going to be new, younger, fresh blood. Because that's what Chris Jury likes, right? So,
that's right, yeah.
Have you ever, ever seen Connor McDavid play worse than he did in game four?
I love that you say this, because yesterday I said he's going to get five points in his next game.
Okay, well, that being said, that's what great players do. They bounce back. But it was unbelievable watching game four with Vegas and Edmonton. Connor McDavid was invisible. You didn't even know he was on the ice. And that, to me, is incredible.
That's a word I don't think you could ever use to describe a Connor McDavid game.
That's what I mean.
Until that game.
Why?
I was shocked.
Why are we seeing this? And I don't know. All I can say is this, JR. Connor McDavid plays an 82-game schedule. I'm pretty sure that he plays more minutes played than 80% of defensemen who play usually more minutes than forwards, right? He is on the ice. He's averaging like 23 minutes a night as a forward. That is insanely high. Would you agree?
Yeah.
Okay. So after 82-game schedule, JR, I just wonder if he's just fatigued.
Tired.
He just finished a season that he's pushing, records. He's pushing records. He became the sixth player in NHL history to score over 150 points. He was pushing for a goal record. He ended up scoring what, 64 this year or whatever. I just find they end up making the playoffs, which I not only making the playoffs, but they were fighting for the top seat in the Western Conference. I just find that there's so much that went into the season. I only ask the question, is he fatiguing out? And that's, it's a long season.
I totally agree with you. And by the way, Connor McDavid is allowed to have a bad game. So I'm not sitting here giving him shit. I'm actually sitting here really, it's amazing to me that he's human. Okay. Because he's superhuman. He's so good. And the fact that he could look so average, either it's a testament to how good Vegas played against them. They played physical and they played much better than they did in game three. Or what you're saying is right. Maybe, you know, he just came off a 4-point night in the game before, right? 2 goals, 2 assists. So he's not that tired, but you can't go from getting 4 points and looking like the king of the world to being all of a sudden you don't have any energy. But it's just, I think it's a combination of the two, what I just said.
Does that not seem to sum up the NHL in general right now in the playoffs? You have one team, for an example, you have one team that goes and wins 5-1, and then the very next night they lose 5-1. And then they come back and a team wins 8-4, like New Jersey, and then all of a sudden the Canes come back and they spank them 6-1. I'm like, what the hell's going on?
What's going on? What happens in those 2 days?
You know,
of preparation or
look at Dallas.
The way you play. Dallas again.
They get absolutely. I watched that 7-2 game, and Seattle looked like they were playing an American Hockey League team. They were all over them. The energy, the building was flying. They were just scoring goals. It was crazy. And then all of a sudden, boom! Dallas is up what, 4-0 in the first part of the second period. I'm like, what is going on with these playoffs? And it seems like all the playoffs are the same thing, right?
I think it goes to show the mentality of players today. They get so emotionally high when they win and then so pissed off when they lose, or at least focus when they lose. And when they win, it's like, oh, yeah, we got it made. We're good now. We're good. We're going to come back. We're going to win. And then they let their guard down. And then when they lose, when they get kicked in the balls, they're like, okay, now we got to play again. Right? It's just, why don't they just stay neutral? No emotional highs and lows. That's what we talked about. Don't get mad. Don't get happy when you win 7-1. Just go about it and go back to it. I think they just let their guard down, man. It's just, again, it's, whether it's youth or just the young people today that don't have that same focus day in and day out.
I think it has to do with the emotional side of thing. You know, the playoffs are so amazing. They're so amazing. They're so emotional. You're literally on a roller coaster, right? And I find older players that have won in the past and understand the game better are the ones that can channel the emotions better. Right after a loss or a big win, you know, that's the only thing I can attribute this to. Because it seems like this is happening in
weird,
all the series,
but it's not just one
series.
And we always say every year that, you know, something happens in playoffs where we say, wow, this is crazy. But this is probably the craziest playoffs that I can remember in recent history. You have the top teams in the league are gone. Bye-bye. with the exception of Carolina. With the exception of Carolina. You know, Vegas and Edmonton, yes. But, I mean, the National Hockey League's got to be sitting there saying, holy shit, we're probably going to either have Carolina or Florida in the final. And we could possibly have Dallas, which is not a big draw in terms of television viewers. Edmonton would be good because of McDavid and Draisaitl with the marketing of it. But, God, it's just – I mean, Florida's – I don't see Florida losing tonight. I don't see them trying to go back to – they played tonight against Toronto.
Yeah.
Well, the one thing you have to look at, too, is you have Joseph Woll is going to be playing in the Nets tonight. It's a guy who's played 11 career NHL games.
Rut row.
And on top of that, here, let's start a fire. Let's start a bonfire. And now we're going to throw some gas on it. And the gas is this: Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, John Tavares, William Nylander, the face of this organization, have 0 goals in this series. 0 goals. They've played 3 games.
I picked Florida, Craig, to beat Boston. I picked Florida to beat Toronto. And I'm just going to say this. I am not comfortable still at 3-0 as a guy that picked Florida to win this series. I do not think this series is over for that reason that you just mentioned. Because I'm going to tell you,
I mean, listen,
there's one team that can score 28 to 30 goals in the next 4 games. Because they have Woll in net and they know they have to score, it's Toronto Maple Leafs, man.
It's a good point. It's a really good point. But and again, this what you just said, Marner, Nylander, Matthews, Tavares. Okay, Tavares, even though he had a great season, they all had a good season. The knock against these guys the last couple years is they're not playoff players. And if they go through this series with no goals, I don't care if they won the first round. People are going to scream and yell about their lack of
They shouldn't have won the first round, JR. Can we agree with that? I'm going to tell you this. You watch the series. They did not deserve to win game 3. They did not deserve to win game 3. They scored with what? One minute left with Ryan O'Reilly in front of the net. They won in overtime. Good for them. They scored
2 goals in the last 4 minutes too.
That's the thing. Right? I mean, in game four, Tampa Bay was up 4-1 late in the second period. I mean, they were dominating the game physically. They were dominating in all areas of the ice, and Toronto in the series, which they won. Yes. They scored very timely goals. Okay. And very again, timely goals.
That goes for what Petey just said, right? He just said if there's a team that can score goals at timely, you know, positions, it's Toronto. So it's a great point by you, Petey.
If you are Florida, what would be your game plan going into game 4? What would be the thought in your head in what you would want to try and accomplish throughout the game?
Well, I mean, for me, it's probably out of their comfort zone, but playing a more defensive style game to frustrate those guys again. Defense. Don't get into a track meet with Toronto. If you get into a track meet, they're gonna win 8-7. You have to depend on your goalie, play extreme tight defense, play physical, and win 2-1.
For me, you just hit it right on the head. You hit the nail right on the head, JR. You're going to play a physical, hard-nosed brand of hockey, but you are going to play a style that is going – you're going to care about defense more. You're not going to get in the track meet, just like you said, because if you get into a track meet with Toronto, most likely you're going to end up on the wrong side. Here's the thing. You have – Toronto has played – they play soft. Like Marner, Nylander, Austin Matthews are soft hockey players. It's just like, I hate to say it, when they lose this series and they will lose this series, there has to be change. There has to be change because these are not, they do not look like playoff performers. I hate to say it.
Yeah, they're 100% right.
Change.
And one thing that we didn't, say about a team that's in the situation like Toronto, if you play patient defensive hockey, what's Toronto going to do? They're going to take chances. They're going to take risks. And it's going to open up all sorts of offense for like guys like Tkachuk, like Barkov, like, you know, these guys that can really go. But it's going to be interesting, man. I agree with you. If Toronto loses, someone's got to go. Someone's got to get traded.
I just hope it's not Dubas. I'm going to tell you this. I hope it's not Dubas because I think that he is implemented and put together a team that has been extremely successful. But right now, I think that after this year, he's rode these horses for a very, very long time. There's going to be a point in time when you have to say, you know what? I need to abort the mission here and I need to make changes, even though.
Yeah.
And it's not like you're going to trade away, for an example, a Marner or a William Nylander who scored 40 goals this year and had 87 points. Listen to me. I am going to trade one of them.
Yes. I agree with you. I don't think Dubas should be the scapegoat here. I totally agree with you. But is it going to be a player or is it going to be 100%. The coach? I think it's time for a player to go there.
Yes. I asked the question to Thomas Fanek, JR, and you can answer the same damn question, man. I asked the question. Mitch Marner is making $11 million a year. Auston Matthews, $11.6 million a year. William Nylander, $7 million a year. John Tavares, $11 million. Do you think sometimes players can get complacent because they're super young and they're making a shit bomb of money? It is so much money.
I say that all the time.
I'm delusional in the way I see life because I've been very fortunate in life, okay? But I'm going to tell you right now, those kids there, that's next level delusion.
Okay.
So they are not normal.
This is my assessment. I say the same thing as you, Riv, because one thing that Mike Keenan always used to say, Mike Keenan used to scream in the locker room every single day because he wanted everybody uncomfortable. Comfort leads to complacency, right? You become complacent. And when you become complacent, you let your guard down. You don't prepare right. You don't give a shit as much. And when these guys are making this much money and they're this comfortable in their life, what do they have to worry about? And when you worry and you fear things, that's when you fight the hardest. Yes. Like when we were playing back in the early 90s and we were making some good money. I mean, I was making $1 million in the beginning of the 90s. That's a lot of money for the beginning of the 90s, $1 million.
Yeah.
But if I didn't play in the National Hockey League, if I was in the minors, I'd be making $100. And if I didn't play at all, guess what? I have to go find another job. I have to go find out something else to do rather than playing the best game in the world as a job. So you know what? I had to fight for it because I wasn't comfortable of what could happen if I didn't stay here. If these guys are gone tomorrow with their guaranteed contracts, they're going to be fine for a long time because of the money that they've put away. The comfort leads to complacency. And I think a lot of these kids have that. You're exactly right.
And listen, I'm going to say something. A lot of kids have this, right? And I'm asking a hypothetical question. I'm not saying Mitch Marner is complacent. I'm not saying Auston Matthews is complacent or William Nylander. I'm only asking the question because they seem to be in an environment where they're not getting to the next level. And why is that? Are they a little bit too complacent there? Now, there are other players that make just as much money.
Is there a level of care, right? We all know they want to win. I mean, we're not taking anything away. Auston Matthews is a fucking competitor.
Yes,
they're
I know.
They're all competitors.
That. Absolutely.
They want to win. They want
all
to win.
Of them are.
But is there another level of wanting to win? Is there a Matthew Tkachuk level of wanting to win? Okay. That's a diff, right?
This was going to be one of my points. Matthew Tkachuk, Brady Tkachuk. I think if you were to pay them $25 million a year and be the highest paid player in the game, I still think they want to kill somebody. I still think they want to go to the wire. Because it's not about money for them. It's not about, I don't give a shit if I have friggin' 10 bucks. He's like, I love the game. I want to win. I want to play for my teammates.
I think in a weird way, he gets off on acting the way that he acts out on the ice.
For sure. For sure. Yes. But you know what, though?
He gets off on being a dickhead.
Yeah.
But he is going to do anything to win the game.
But being loved by his teammates fucking love him.
And hated.
I'm telling you this. They have pride in their jersey, but they also have pride in their name. And their dad instilled the pride in his name. And I tell you, they play like it. And you're right.
We got to give a little credit to Mrs. Tkachuk too. She seems like a no nonsense woman herself. So
she is the absolute boss of that house.
Well,
she is a boss.
Here's one thing I'm going to make absolutely clear about the Tkachuks. Okay, Brady was born September 16th. Okay, Matthew was born. Oh, that's Keith. Matthew was born December 11th. Craig, what's the cutoff day for the draft?
September 15th.
You don't think that Big Walt was thinking about when he was making kids that they're going to be late birthdays so they can be drafted the next year?
You either want your little son born in January or you want him born after September 15th. There's one of the two things.
That's right.
I was born September 13th. I missed that cutoff day by 2 days.
And you were a third rounder.
I was a third rounder in my normal year, but my next year in junior, I scored 19 goals that year and led the OHL in goals, and I had 74 points.
Wow.
So if I was drafted.
And 117 PIMs.
And I don't know what I had.
Then you had 12 points in 16 playoff games in your draft year.
That's
So
you would have been a first rounder.
I would have been easily a first rounder with the goals and points that I put up in junior, and I was fighting. So there was a big difference between my first year in the OHL, which I did get drafted in my first year to Montreal in the third round. But if I would have been born 2 days later, I would have had I would have had 74 points, 19 goals, and that would have put me easily in the first round.
Let's see. The 1993 entry draft. Are you ready? First overall, Alexander Dagg to Ottawa, Hartford, Pronger, Tampa, Chris Gratton, Anaheim, Paul Kariya, Florida, Rob Niedermeyer, San Jose, Victor Kozlov, seven, Jason Arnott. What a draft. Rangers, Nicholas Sudstrom, Dallas, Todd Harvey. Remember Todd Harvey?
Jocelyn Thibault.
Awesome. Yeah.
Okay. So 11 overall. Was Brendan Witt?
Who's the worst player of those of that draft? Probably was Alexander Dagg, first overall. Yeah,
absolutely.
What hand was Brendan Witt? What hand did he
lefty
shoot?
Okay, lefty.
Was there as much emphasis on lefties and righties back then as there is now?
No.
Well, listen. I mean, there's a massive. It's always been big, the right-handed defenseman. I don't know why. It kind of sounds kind of ridiculous to me, but what I think it's for every 10 defensemen, it's like
you're going ahead of Nick Stajahar.
Nick Stajahar was an absolute monster in junior. He scored 33 goals one year.
Yeah, but in his draft year, 92-93, he had 15 goals and 61 points. 49 games, actually. You outscored him.
Yeah.
So
he was a good defense first round.
Easily a first round. JR, I wish we could say the same about you, eh? But you were eighth overall. I mean, fuck.
And guess what? If you would have played in the OHL and not Hall Olympics, you probably would have went first overall.
Medano did the right thing. He went to the Western League, you know, so he definitely got the upper hand on that one. But I would have had to go into the Sioux, right? And the Sioux was probably the most travel of any team in the OHL. Am I wrong?
I'd say, yep, pretty close, yep.
Yeah. Yeah, and I didn't like that. I don't want to be on that many buses.
You did not want to go from Boston to the Sioux. I can tell you that right now.
No. So who plays tonight? Who plays tonight? Toronto, Florida.
And Vegas, Florida. Edmonton. And I, you know, I was thinking about you this morning, Jeremy, when I was, I'm going to have to go to the bank machine, grab you a crisp $100 bill. And
maybe, you never know. And it's close.
You're never going to be able to spend it after what I write and draw on it. I will give you another $100 if you try to cash it.
I'm gonna take this picture down, and I'm just gonna put a little.
I'm sending it framed. I'm sending it framed. Trust me.
It's gonna be on every show. It's gonna be on every show.
It's coming to you framed if I lose this series.
But you know what though? You never know. It's like 1 minute. I think, oh my gosh, we're done. I'm done. I'm gonna have to send you $100, and then the next, you know.
What's your projection for tonight's games?
I think Florida closes it out.
Really?
I just think they're playing the best hockey, and their goaltender is playing the best out of anybody in the game right now. And that's
I'm happiest
huge.
For him in the entire playoffs, because I've shit on him and he's been called the worst contract. I don't know him at all. I've never played with him. All I can tell you is that I'm really happy.
Well, his contract has sucked since he's come to Florida. He's been abysmal.
He's been overpaid. Yep.
Like there's a reason why Lions, yeah, a guy that we've never even heard of before and who's 30 years old, came in and played like the last 15 games of the year because he was playing really well and Bob hasn't played well.
I don't even know what my best goal total was in the playoffs. Maybe 11 or 12. Maybe.
Bullshit. 1992. No, I don't, honest.
92, maybe. 92. Let's go. I don't know how you look that up.
What do you mean you don't know how you look that up? You go to the most legendary hockey site in the history of hockey. It's called HockeyDB.
Well, you had 11 goals in 89-90. You had 12 goals in 91-92. So that was your test.
Yeah, so I said 12. Yeah. Well, 89-90, by the way, 89-90 was my second year in the league. That's pretty good goal totals in my second year. That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's crazy.
For a sophomore.
That was the year you guys lost to Pittsburgh in the finals?
The year before that, you were playing 92. In the Hall Olympics.
Yeah.
Like, how is that possible that you go and shred the playoffs for 11?
That was 91, 92.
Look at my Hall Olympics stats.
28 games played. You had 34 goals, 70 points. What? But let me tell you something, JR. Like I said before, if you were playing in the OHL, that would have been like 40 points. Because we know how to play the game, okay?
Fucking dickhead.
Well, you know what helped me? You know what helped me in Hull? Playing with my winger, my right winger.
Mark
a guy
Jelena?
By the name of Martin Jelena. Yep.
And really?
He got drafted 7, and I got drafted 8 off the same team. That was pretty cool.
Holy jumping.
Yeah, and he's the one that got traded for Gretzky. Martin Jelena and Jimmy Carson went.
You know who led your team that year in points?
Stefan Matteau,
44 goals, 89 points, 202 penalty minutes.
It was a crazy, crazy team, man. We had a really good team. Carl Dykus is on that team. My buddy
Cam Russell.
Yeah, we played with him. He was a tough as nails motherfucker, man. Yeah, we had a good team. Cam was the captain of that team. Martin Jelena, Stefan Matteau,
Craig Martin
was tough, man. He was my protector. Anything that happened on that team, he was my protector. We had a great team. We should have won the Memorial Cup that year. We got upset. It's crazy. But anyway, I just got to give props to how good Seattle's playing, man. I know they lost last night, which is, it's fine. But game three, I don't know if you watched Seattle game three against Dallas. It was 7-2. I have never seen a team work as hard, player for player, line for line, for 60 minutes, no matter what the score was. I was so impressed. Dallas could not even, they couldn't get out of their own way. It was like a bunch of gnats just surrounding their heads and nowhere to go. It was really, really impressive. They got to get back to that style again, like they did game three, because they didn't
all
do
team,
it last night.
Team oriented. That's what they mm-hmm. they survive on great goaltending from Grubauer. I love the defense core for the Kraken, and they have a bunch of players that just play for each other, and they have four lines that are not elite. Yeah. They're not elite, but they're all four lines of really, really tough players to play against. And they're doing it. They're doing it without their leading point producer this year in Jared McCann.
Yeah.
Which is even more mind boggling.
And you know, it's good. It's good for the league. You have the two most exciting places to watch a hockey game. The two, Vegas and Seattle. My buddy was at the Seattle game the other day. He said he has never been in a professional event that was as exciting and electric and loud and fun as it was being in that Seattle building. And if you guys have been to Vegas, every single game in Vegas is absolutely like one of the best things that you can do is watch a game in Vegas. That's good marketing. That is good marketing. That is good energy. So good for them, man. Good for them. Yep. That's it. That's all I got, boys.
Whiskey sales jacking up, getting ready for spring and summer.
We're pretty good. I actually just did a cameo the other day where the guy bought a whole bunch of presents for his groomsmen, and they were Whiskey in the Wild bottles for his groomsmen. So great gift. So he's a smart man. Yes, we're doing very well. So we got to keep it going.
Where do they find it? Whiskeyinthewild.com.
Whiskeyinthewild.com, baby.
That's a wrap on another episode of After the Whistle. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter, After the Whistle, and at Craig Revay 52, at the Instigator 76. And you can find us, as you already know, on Apple, Spotify, and YouTube, and anywhere else where you can get your podcast. Thanks for tuning in. Don't forget to spread the word.